Churches and buildings of this sort are designed architecturally to transmit energy. Their spires are structured in such a way as to channel energy up and from the earth to the sky, possibly being absorbed by the transdimensional reptilians or even transmitted off-planet to one of their locations in the solar system or cosmos, such as the planet Saturn, or through black holes to another dimension or region of the galaxy. The hapless slaves who congregate as so many dupes of Judah and indeed of Jehovah in their angel hive louche collectors called churches, simply have their energy vampirized by these entities in one way or another, empowering those on the earth or in other dimensions. They are trapped in a cycle of reciprocal use and abuse in which these entities and their priest caste delegates create fear and low vibrational states of consciousness and thereby vampirize their life force, keeping them coming back for more, thinking that the solution to their problems can be found at the problem source. This absurd abusiveness extends to all the functions of the system of the vampire farm. The medical system purports to heal but in fact harms the patient or sufferer seeks remedy for their sufferings, being ignorant of the causes and having been conditioned to venerate their medical priests obsequiously before then in a profane rite of allopathic self-sacrifice, allowing themselves to be poisoned with pharmaceuticals and radiation, injected with poisons and biological weapons called vaccines, and subject to anatomical mutilations and corruptions of whatever variety. They seek the solution to their problem from, if not the source in this case, then a source which simply compounds their problems and adds insult to injury through such injurious reliance upon the unquestionable medical priest. In terms of the legal system, the system imposes legal prosecution and penalties upon the gullible. The gullible seek help from the system which attacks them, incurring legal fees and compounding their stress and anxiety, which fills the coffers of the priests of Saturn with their bioenergy, not only in the form of money but in that of louche. The stress induced by the prosecution and indeed by the penalty, if such is the result, causes the emanation of louche which the vampiric entities can feed off, and which, being trapped in greater conditions of restriction, places one in a position for greater vampirization. Be it the labor force of coerced wage slavery or the various facets of the chiliagon of the crystalline matrix, all are subject to entropy and the amortization of their life force over time, their lifespans having been proportionally reduced over the incarnations and the cycles of time of the Manwantara. One must, in order to liberate both his own individual soul and that of Gaia and her denizens, each sharing to relative degrees in the collective consciousness from the matrix prison, shatter this crystalline matrix. The false light gaslight of the black magicians of Zion continues to mesmerize and deceive the majority, who understand only effects not causes and can't trace the problems on this earth to their ultimate cause, that being the architects of destruction, the vampires of the animal farm, who pull the levers of the matrix machine to trap our souls in the lowest density while we atrophy and feed these entities with our life force. All of the architecture of Zion, its systems of information processing, run on the demon of electricity, the demiurge. It is this architecture and its architects which keep us enslaved. Hence both it and they must be sabotaged with the wrecking ball of our collective willpower, led by Aryan adepts who will guide the aggressive force of the masses to the proper target. Only then can the refulgent light of a new golden age dawn upon this earth. RoboCop, planned obsolescence of human wetware. The function and role of what is euphemistically referred to as law enforcement has been a presence throughout history and used by the priest caste as a mechanism of enforcing their will upon the slave population. Physical coercion of compliance with what is called law is carried out through the trained instruments of human wetware, who are called law enforcement officers in contemporary jargon. In the ancient world, especially in the semitized Near Eastern Mediterranean regions or in the cloaca gentia of Asiatic despotism, the hired toughs or law enforcers were a ubiquitous presence. These instruments of the state and its controlling architects, the priest caste and nobility, were their perpetual sword and shield against the masses, whose primordial instinctive rebelliousness, based upon an impulsive desire consciousness, had to be restrained. This at least was and is the perspective of the priest caste, who justify their overlordship over the broad masses under the pretext of keeping order and preventing violations thereof, what they construe as violence or crime. Perhaps to some extent this conception is correct. The broad masses have their tendencies toward irrational outbursts and are largely governed by impulse. However, in a traditional society where each cast member knew their place, there was less need for an omnipresent police and military phalanx subjecting the population to the panoptic vision of the priestly caste network of spies and thugs who are now dignified with the title law enforcement officer. Thus, in the ancient world, it was usually only within multi-ethnic empires and cities that there was need of a veritable militarized police force. Within traditional societies of a homogeneous nature, the need of police was an absence, and instead organically formed militias took their place, with the citizens self-organizing and repelling raiders and brigands and punishing transgressors of their ethical law in a manner that reflected the will of the collective as embodied in and represented by its leadership. The distinction between the two forms of law enforcement is that between the two distinct types of community, the artificial multi-ethnic state form and the organic state or community whose members were of a relatively homogeneous kind. Thus, it can be seen that in the case of the Cloaca Gentium of Empire, a police force existing independently of the peasants was a necessity to attempt to impose the priestly caste will called law upon their slaves, and in the latter case of an organic state or traditional nation, no such enforcers were needed. As no such artificial, abstract, bureaucratized law existed, only the cultural soul of the organic collective reacting and interacting with the outsider prevailed as a mechanism of self-preservation and empowerment. Another factor in the development of the police lies in the type of consciousness of the priest caste. In the case of the hybridized Negroid and Mongoloid Mediterranean and Asiatic stock, the will of the sovereign power approximates the despotic will of their deities, or the monotheism of the earliest Abrahamics, or the polytheism of those religious forms which preceded Abrahamism and which had developed under the consciousness of the hybrid. Hence the thug-like personality of the hybrid stock, especially that of the Near Eastern and Mediterranean despot, translated itself into action in the form of a society of masters and slaves, both castes being sharply divided by a thin blue line of thugs. The Worker Police Genealogy by Bruno Carreau further amplifies upon the development of the police in more contemporary times around the time of the French Revolution. Figures such as the French Quondam criminal become police chief Vidocq and the justice minister of Napoleon Joseph Fouché were classic early prototypes of the criminal nature of those whose status as law enforcement officers was elevated above the fray and molded into a statue of bronze before which the broad masses were required to doff their cap and bow their head in obsequious obedience to the law. An attack upon the king's men is an attack upon the king himself, and would merit, according to the logistics of discipline and punish, of the state and its black magician architects, the appropriate consequences. The procedures of classical conditioning inbuilt into the system conditioned the masses into servility before the sovereign power. Object lessons were routinely acted out by the latter with such sensationalistic and shocking displays of punishment as public torture, execution and witch burning being a horror spectacle before which the masses were to be cowed into obedience before the law lest they suffer a similar fate. Thus can be seen how the vampire system of Zion works across all dimensions of consciousness and lived experience, the law in its juridical legal form claiming to have been a concretization of the divine will mediated through priestly caste representatives who received kosher approval through indoctrination from birth and who were in most cases derived from certain family lines of the priest caste. The administration or enforcement of law beneath them being a translation of priestly caste decree in tandem with administrative decree into concrete action, which was and is the function of police. Within the function of an organic state, this would have merit and be a direct and authentic transmission of the conscious will of the cultural organism into concrete action in defense of itself and its members. Within the context of the Cloaca Gentium of modernity, such a translation of priestly caste decree into tangible action could only be at best a crude approximation of truth, and hence, though operating under the color of law, was a rough justice, in most cases more unjust than just, and the more unjust the further along in the Kali Yuga. The regression of the castes and the intrusion into the priest caste, especially of rogue elements of black magicians, notably Jews, who had inserted themselves into spaces they had opened up through bribery and orchestrated revolutions, signaled the death knell of justice in a cosmic sense. Henceforth, the scales of justice were increasingly unbalanced, destabilized by 1. the unbalanced minds of the hybrid priest caste and their lackeys, and two, by the mixture and in many cases unfortunate hybridization of the population, which as a population could serve only the function of a crucible of chaos. This Volk chaos generated yet more need for order, and hence a greater need for police within the context of degenerate modernity. The mafia criminality which exploded in America during the fin de siècle period was a direct result of the invasion of Ellis Island by Sicilian and Russian Jews who, upon arrival in their new host, immediately formed gangs in opposition to the indigenous population. The White Hand Gang of Irish New Yorkers was formed as a reaction to that of the Black Hand of Mishpooka Kosher Nostra criminals who were accommodated by the priestly caste elite of Judeo-Christians. The creed of egalitarianism, in which there was neither Jew nor Greek, enabled the passage of the plague rats to invade, their ships finding safe harbor for their diabolical praxis under the petticoats of Lady Liberty, aka Isis, the Mother Goddess. The presence of Jewish criminality attempted to conceal itself behind the phalanxes of Italian soldiers as front men, while the dons were invariably situated in relative comfort and affluence behind their ethnic shabbos goyim. The creation of the problem of crime, of violent action meeting with priestly caste disapproval and disfavor, led dialectically to the formation of rival phalanxes to prevent crime, what came to be identified by the term police. It was the fin de siècle period which witnessed the greatest development of the police forces heretofore. Jewish academics such as Cecil Ambrosio, in his work Criminal Man, drew upon the latest trend of anthropological science as a discourse of power-knowledge relations, which was another weapon in the arsenal of the black magician priest caste to subjugate and enslave populations through qualifying them as criminal man or quasi-criminal or good citizen. Anyone bearing the former two designations upon meeting their criteria based upon anatomical features, was placed under the vision of the panopticon open-air prison of Zion and subject to segregation, scrutiny and marginalization, in effect, excommunicated from the land of milk and honey of Judeo-Christian, good society. This discourse of forensic anthropology, in conjunction with that of the developing pseudoscience of psychology under the Jew Sigmund Freud, were designed as discursive mechanisms of control, of the making of populations objects of knowledge power, then, having been assigned their respective categorical label, they were subject to the appropriate consequences by the state and its controllers according to the modal logic of the system. At this time the police were given little training in any higher sense, though kosher-approved knowledge trickled down into their consciousness and formed them as a type of human wetware with certain programmed dispositions and sets of reactions and behaviors. The police were invariably Christian and specifically Catholic within the New York area, and the additional programming of elementary psychology and anthropology amplified their total transformation into a mechanical arm of statecraft with a consciousness marching in lockstep with the priestly caste as its iron heel enforcers of the law. Further, the technology that had been developed around this time by the Aryan genius Thomas Edison, the motion picture, was expropriated by jury who had, through organized crime and its international connections and servants in the Judeo-Christian clergy, been enabled to pervert and misuse it. The Jews began to develop motion pictures modeled on Freudian psychology, presenting lurid and titillating, shocking and melodramatic stories which were designed to implant certain thought forms into the consciousness of youth. The pre-code filmography consisted in scenes of crime which purported to condemn crime while simultaneously glorifying it at an inner level of the consciousness of the instinctive-minded masses. Crime doesn't pay was the message which to some of the audience glorified the police, and to those not members of the moral majority indirectly presented the criminal as a tragic figure fallen from the grace of priestly caste approval who lived a life of danger and risk. This played to the eros and thanatosidic consciousness of the peasant caste who secretly delighted in the aggressive anti-heroic figure who was scorned just as they were by the moral majority and its neurotic bourgeois mores of inhibition and restriction. This liberating influence of Jewish Hollywood films seeded the ideas of crime paying dividends in the form of fame and glamour, even if having a tragic ending. The function of the indoctrination of these films and other media such as comic books dialectically engineered in the mass consciousness the desirability of police presence and garnered support for the installation of their slave masters, whose sole function was a restriction of that very liberty which they vicariously experienced in a simulacral form through the medium of movies, comic books and crime novels. Thus the institution of policing became embedded in the consciousness of the population and was institutionalized as a socially approved necessary presence, no longer merely, like the earlier private security firm of Pinkertons, a hired bully whose function was to club the peasants, but a protector and defender of the sheepdogs of the shepherd kings of the order of Melchizedek. Thereby the notion of community policing was introduced, a euphemistic phrase which, connoting a sheepdog protecting the sheep from wolves, bad peasants, criminals, functioned to extend the power of the priest caste more ubiquitously as a dragnet in which the bad or evil were caught and justly punished according to priestly caste logistics, and the good could happily pass through the nets unscathed. Nonetheless, all were and indeed are to this day trapped within the electromagnetic surveillance dragnet of the Zion system, and none now may exist outside of its total information awareness. The entire apparatus of the technocracy extends itself on, above and below Gaia Terra, and is controlled ultimately in subterranean nether regions by the transdimensional reptilians as the true architects of the system, invisible to most all save their hybrid children, the Jews, and their kosher-approved black magician Shabbos Goyim. Those diabolical presences of other dimensional species, vampires of the life force of those they seek to enslave on their animal farm of bipedal Goyim, rarely are known to the useful idiots who play a role in the system as its enforcers. However, their influence extends downward even into the barracks of their Iron Heel enforcers, whose relative ignorance is determined by rank. The higher up the ranks the enforcers go, the more initiated they become in the sinister processes of the black magicians and their overlords, the reptilians. Parallels with Freemasonry are strictly correlated with the rank structure of military and police, with all police at or above the level of sergeant participating in the diabolical black magic of Masonry and becoming assimilated into the hive mind of Zion through these same rites, allowing their souls, perhaps without understanding what they're getting into, to be captured by the reptilians, some becoming possessed, perhaps others having a relative degree of autonomy to maintain some semblance of normal life on the slave farm of the Zion Matrix. In the case of the military, given its more limited function of direct aggression against the population and its larger numbers, Masonic appointments are presumably restricted to the officer caste and high-level NCOs. The entire trapezoidal structure of the system is designed in a compartmentalized fashion, with each level being tightly segregated from those below it, so that those above have power knowledge over those below and thus exert control over their underlings. The lower ranks are only slightly removed from the average civilian population, although having greater physical but not spiritual power, and in occult terms the number of the citizens or civvies, as they are contemptuously stigmatized by the military and police members as an institutionalized perspective, is 666, and that of the military and police ranks being 667, the first six being spirit, the second soul, and the last number being the physical body, with six connoting material density and seven a higher frequency or dimension of being. The Masonic Fraternal Order of Police is its true governing body, with all other functions and associations subordinate thereto, constituting merely contingent and pragmatic ensembles of organization and collective action. Like all things within the inner sanctum of Masonry, the Fraternal Order of Police is simply an instrument in the hidden hands of the reptilians, which is of contingent use and whose existence is simply a transient means of controlling the human all-too-human peasant population. Both human all-too-human police, whose number is 667, and those they bully, whose number is 666, are simply human or other animal men, wetware in the informational control system of Zion, who are slated for the scrap heap once the reptilians are sufficiently in position to do away with their animate tools on the vampire farm. As Susan B. Reed in her book The Body Snatchers has revealed, they will be replaced by reptilian hybrids who are less rebellious and more compatible with their Zion hive mind. Perhaps a contingent of humanoid animal men would be kept around, grown as livestock to feed upon by these reptilian creatures, the mongrelized slave stock comprising an inventory of livestock on the vampire farm, having no functional mind or freedom whatsoever and being simply entertainment for the reptilians' violent sadism and the main course of their feasting. Robert E. Dickhoff, The German Buddhist who relocated to Tibet in the 1920s prior to the Second World War wrote in his book Agatha of how reptilians who had been living on Venus were intending to travel to Earth and occupy it for the consumption of the earthly denizens. The police, however, and their military analogue, each merging together into a Judge Dredd-style Robocop, are deployed by the priest caste to ensure that any potential rebellion against their masters fails. Indeed, this is the function of police, to ensure the masters remain fat and happy and their slaves neutralized by whatever means, always and ultimately with the implied threat of deadly force, the true power, as Mao Zedong said, coming from the barrel of a gun, either the priestly caste threat of hellfire or, failing that, the gunfire of military and police, or more recent non-lethal technology, microwave and directed energy weapons, the electronic fire of the demiurge. Movies such as Judge Dredd and Robocop were released during the time when the citizen population had begun to become restless in the United States of America Corporation. The Vietnam War and the Kennedy assassination had shifted the consciousness of the population toward a state of suspicion with respect to the trustworthiness of their government, which just shortly before this time they embraced with jingoistic frenzy, culminating in the massacre of their own race in the Second World War and their own subsequent immersion in the mire of the Cloaca Gentium jury was in process of constructing. Accordingly, the JOG system had to predictably program the population into compliance with law using propaganda films centered around the Vietnam War to melodramatize the corruption of government and keep their plantation serfs trapped within the left-right paradigm of Democratic Party politics, dividing and conquering the population against itself. Rambo depicted a heroic youth who had served his country with noble intent in its war against Vietnam and the spiteful and hostile backlash of backwoods ignoramuses who dishonored their badges as law enforcement officers. Thus, the legitimacy of law enforcement was called into question in the popular mass mind, and the citizens and police were subject to a further divide and conquer conditioning, leading the mass mind of the fraternal order of police and that of the peasants into a relationship more antagonistic than that which had crystallized during the time of the Andy Griffith Show, the man of the people police officer archetype. The cabal established the police in its mind control apparatus as initially good sheepdogs defending law and order, then as buffoons, and finally as scoundrels and tainted and untrustworthy figures, though only in part, still possessing redeemable qualities, testaments to the fallibility of human wetware. This confusion of the mass mind with mixed messages further assisted in neutralizing any prospective rebellion amongst the broad masses, who were in the state of confusion as to whether their sheepdogs were friend or foe. Similar to the red and blue lights on police cruisers, which signal activity and passivity, aggression and its neutralization, the mass mind was neutralized in its aggressive hostility through not knowing how to act. Mind control, world control. Around the mid to late 80s, the TV show Cops was created, glorifying the police as heroes. Simultaneously, predictive programming films of rogue police bucking the letter of the law, such as Cobra with Stallone and The Running Man with Schwarzenegger, portrayed police as victims of the system, just trying to do what's right but being hamstrung by bureaucratic red tape. This portrayal of police as dutiful heroes just wanting to carry out justice, but the system with its heartless bureaucrats who created injustice preventing them, was the new archetype introduced in the life cycle of the police. This signaled its waning of youthful vitality as an institution based upon a failed integration of human wetware and technologized bureaucracy. Dirty Harry was yet another of these movies which blurred the lines of the Judeo-Christian evil and good and conditioned the mass mind to be receptive to the operations of the developing militarized police state as simply a child of necessity, birth pangs of a utopian world of safety and security amidst a fallen world of satanic evil. Such was and indeed is the intention of the programmers of Zion. However, as of the time of this writing, there is a paradigm shift as the Kali Yuga spirals down in its nadir, that being an expiry date uncovered on the rusty human wetware who, for the cabal of dark forces, have largely outlived their usefulness. Accordingly, the planning department of the Jewish Utopia have decided that the system has no need of their human wetware. The development by human hands, typically by the genius of the Aryan race, of robots, has supplanted the need for fallible human agents whose capacity to think independently of the system and whose limited informational capacity doesn't meet the requirements of the architects of destruction, has rendered them obsolete machines. The black magicians who envision a final confrontation with the Goyim necessitating the elimination of fallible human all too human agents is now up to us. Hence the final phase of the biblical blueprint of the end times has already been implemented, with police and military having been forcibly injected with biological weapons made in the state of Israel. The human wetware whose number is have had implanted into their meat machine vascular system graphene oxide, which is a substance spanning the organismal and mineral kingdoms, the hardest substance on earth, harder than diamonds, and which, circulating around the bloodstream, will create continual micro-trauma, like razor blades in the bloodstream, eventually forming blood clots that will induce strokes and heart attacks amongst their sheepdog enforcers. To replace their animate tools will be introduced unmanned aerial vehicles, weaponized drones, robots, all controlled by the reptilian hybrids who are known as Jews today and who would have achieved through this means dominion over the earth. This but for the presence of the Reichsdeutsche, the Imperial Germans, who have been a presence on and off the earth ever since at least the end of the Second World War, occupying Antarctica and bases on the Moon and Venus. The hope for a final defeat of the forces of darkness on this earth lies with them and with those who still exist who oppose the Matrix and seek not a cowardly escape in dreams but a destruction, total overthrow, and occupation of the earth in a Rye of fifth density, in Hyperborea Redux. The fourth generational technotronic warfare of the Cabal hence must have its artificial lifeline severed at its source, that being the medium or mode of power it runs on, electricity. To salvage the truly human from the living dead scrap heap of the human all to human animal men requires an unplugging of the system from its power source, the demon of electricity, the demiurge, severing his tie to the earth. The demiurgic matrix of electricity must be dismantled. The destruction of all cell towers, satellites and power generating stations, the highest level wire pullers and button pressers who operate the machine. Only with the disintegration of the system in the manner of Giorgio Frida can the integration of the soul of the truly human become a fait accompli on a spiritualized earth disconnected from the demiurge matrix power system of explosively generated violence, and operating on a harmoniously resonant frequency of the magnetism of Mary Magdalene, the mother gods on the liberated Gaia Sophia. The matrix of inverted reality, the matrix of illusion we are all trapped within like a scorpion in amber may be called the JOG system. It is based on illusions and the illusion makers are the black magicians who conceal themselves behind the curtain of Maya, the veil of Isis, and whose modus operandi is that of concealment and deceit. They are malevolent agents of chaos who engineer chaos as a means of stealing the life force of the denizens of Gaia. Indeed, these sinister black magicians are themselves merely underlings subordinate to other dark forces beyond the veil of Isis, our perceptual field within third density. Pull aside this rainbow veil of illusion and you will see the ultimate cause of global chaos and catastrophe operating through mysterious occult means upon the earth and generating the matrix of illusion that keeps us trapped as a scorpion in amber, unable to move and reduced to a static state of impotence. To identify the architects of destruction of this matrix world of illusion is to recognize the cause of all problems on this earth, which can be traced to them and to them alone. Only then can the crystallized matrix of amber in which we are encased be shattered and the scorpion sting of our will be unleashed to destroy they who wish to enslave, torment and ultimately consume us. They are the transdimensional reptilian extraterrestrials who have transformed our planet into a crystallized and materialized prison structure as means of trapping our souls within, encasing us in their low vibrational frequency of 3D pseudo-reality while they exist in higher dimensions beyond our visual field and absorb our energy for themselves. The entire mechanical system in which we exist has been devised by their overlord deity, the Demiurge, who has with violent force exploded into being, imposing his low vibrational energy upon the pre-existent fabric of reality, the rapist forcing himself upon the mother goddess or Mary Magdalene and rendering the subtle fabric of her green garment defiles with his demonic ejaculate, the encrustation of materialized substance deriving from the electrical orgasm of his will to power, His will to dominate and enslave and absorbed into himself all the vitality of the source from whence he came. The reptilian entities worship his vampiric self and adopt his mode of existence as their own, which could never be a choice on their part but only a necessary function of their uncreative being. They are crystallized fractals of his will. What their origin is a mystery, and yet their historical footprint on Gaia in the form of statuary, iconography, bas-reliefs, wall paintings and mention in sacred texts spanning the globe reveals that they have been on this earth over its entirety and for a considerable period of time, having a malevolent influence on its denizens. The depiction of reptiloid creatures throughout the culture of this world and throughout its millennial history builds a case for the existence of such beings. Beyond this, those in the know, the spiritual adepts who are capable of the second sight, can pull aside the veil of Isis and observe these beings as they carry out their vile actions of soul theft against the hapless pawns they and their hybridized offspring jury have enslaved. Those adepts who are the Aryan warrior priest caste defending the earth plane from the encroachment of these reptilians have been ever at war with them in all dimensions and planes of being, and are engaged in active combat at all times against the dark forces. The mundane do not know what presences exist above their limited and restricted consciousness, and thus all of this discourse will not amount to knowledge for them, only information, opinion, speculation. The demiurge works through his cosmic emissaries, the reptilians, possibly bound up with them in a quid pro quo relationship in which the energy of sacrifice these creatures cause to be released through the chaos they engineer is absorbed into the demiurge as water is leapt upon by electrical fire, the waters of life serving as a conduit of his violent will and rapacious praxis. Their genetically hybridized and engineered minions, those who call themselves Jews on the earth, are the mundane administrators of the Chaos Crucible, which is the JOG system. Subordinate to these reptilian Neanderthal genetic hybrids are the Shabbos Goyim. These non-Jewish and often partially Jewish minions are bound up with Jewry through fear of harm being brought against them or those they love, fear of loss of what they value or incentive. The Shabbos Goyim preyed upon by Jewry span the spectrum of class, from the highest ivory towers of priestcraft to the depths of the gutter. The former are bought with fame and dark occult power, the latter with the infame of thrills and brute pleasure. Once bound up with Jewry, the Shabbos Goyim become caught in the nets of the Matrix system. In order to take, you must give, and with interest is the name of the kosher game. The interest Jewry drafts up in the fine print of his contracts is always based upon the vital force of his slaves, alternately reducible to the food of the demiurge and of his underlings, the life force or energy of the soul. Obligations to labor, to save the Jew's time, money and effort, obligations to undergo activity which drains one of his life force, which is then fed off by these entities, obligations to direct one's conscious energies toward the demiurge, what Jewry calls God, and to transmit his conscious energy toward this entity, allowing his vital force to be drained by this entity as interest on a debt Jewry has imposed upon his slave class. As discussed in the section Vampire Farm, the entire JOG system is engineered to absorb, vampirize, the soul energy or life force from the Goyim, the non-Jewish organic life upon which Jewry and their overlords feed. The devotional prayers of Abrahamic religion and other religious institutions are all designed to feed these entities and ultimately the principal entity God, the demon of electricity who, being a vampire, must absorb the soul energy of his slaves in order to expand himself, just as electricity expands itself through the appropriate medium, be it water or metal. Along the path of his expansion, his rapacious and bloody trek throughout the cosmos, he absorbs and destroys the souls of sentient life, and thus may be likened to the death drivers. His existence is hollow even if apparently the fullness, and he can only fill himself as a leech with the bioelectricity of others. The vampire system, across all of its levels, is designed to absorb the life force into the one false counterfeit deity God. Veneration of the One is to attach oneself to a cosmic leech who drains one of his life force. This is the reason why the devotees of Abrahamic religion have such pasty appearances. They are allowing the very soul of which they as a body are a mere physical manifestation, a fractal reflection of higher planes, to become absorbed into the maw of their vampire god whose word is death, not the false promise of eternal life that such a being has promised in the alleged holy book, which was simply a translation of his aggressive violence into human language mediated through its Jewish scribes. The word is thus a black magic spell used as an incantation to mesmerize and bamboozle the flock of sheep who, through fear of hellfire and fear of homelessness and destitution, congregate in his angel hives to allow the vampirization of their energy by these reptilian creatures and to bleed off whatever king's portion of their vital force he demands as sacrifice unto him. Failing that, one will be harassed to death as a witch, cast out of the good society and into the streets, having been refused employment through the passive aggression of the flock of spiteful sheep. The devious mendacity of the Jew is reflected in the Shaboskoi. At higher levels they consider themselves spiritual Jews, having become hooked by the shepherd's crook of power and money into the Masonic lodge, becoming twice the child of Holof the Jew, and over time become transformed into a quasi-Jew in terms of their consciousness, devious, mendacious, unprincipled, self-interested megalomaniacs displaying the spectrum of traits conventionally considered psychopathic or sociopathic. A hierarchy of evil is established with the installation of the JOG system under the aegis of the reptilians. The Jews are left on the mundane plane to play a role as administrators who must occupy until I come, i.e. to maintain the slave system and to develop it in conjunction with their reptilian overlords' technology and advice and the creative engineering of their Aryan Shaboskoim. The Aryan technology they pervert and use the products of for their sinister purposes of violence. The Jewish hybrids are installed as a more effective means for the reptilians to pacify their slave caste and virally replicate their genetics through interbreeding with the human, all too human, and Aryan populations of the earth. The intention of the reptilians is global dominion and the transformation of Gaia into an animal farm for the consumption of the souls of the human, all too human Goyim and the Aryan race. Perhaps, it may be speculated, the reptilians are unable to live on the Earth with its current atmosphere and therefore must terraform the Earth, as the Jew J. Widener has claimed, increasing the carbon dioxide content of the air as means of respiration. The entire apparatus of the JOG system serves the purpose of generating carbon dioxide and carbon monoxide, the gas and oil industry, the generation of pollution by factories, the combustion engines of machines, whose function is to rape the earth and further pollute the atmosphere, via the car driven by the red tape generator bureaucrat who enables more bodies to populate the earth and to perpetuate the absurd cyclicity of the vampire system, poisoning the atmosphere and enabling these entities to occupy for the realization of their dominion mandate. The consumers serve as the scapegoat who their vampire overlords blame for their own coerced slavery within the slave system. Of course, blame should be apportioned to all, but the ultimate cause of global devastation are the reptilians and their earthly minions' jury, after which in priority of blameworthiness are the Shaboskoim and these in a subordinate hierarchy pervaded by jury as middle and lower level micromanagers, spies and disturbers of the force at all levels of society, from high level Illuminati to low level taxi drivers and security guards, all spying upon and generating chaos against their Goyim farm animals. Gaia under the JOG slave system has been transformed into a natural resource, a materially dense ensemble of substances which are considered mere energetic food for these reptilian life forms, intergalactic slavers and vampires who colonize whole worlds and enforce their oligarchical despotism upon the population, gradually working toward their total vampirization and devastation of the planet. As a microcosm of the demiurgic macrocosm, the reptilians are the sole harvesters of worlds, and beneath or within this mesocosm between Yahweh Jehovah and the humanoid reptilians called Jewry on the earth plane are the reptilians themselves. On the earth plane, the Jews are controlled by the reptilians, and the region of the earth now transformed into a devitalized desert called Israel, and the Middle Eastern region as a whole serves as an example of their locust-like devastation of vital organic life. The Jewish and related stocks, under the tutelage of their reptilian overlords, devastated the area, transforming a once lush region of vitality into a desert barren of life. The desert encroaches, says Nietzsche, and its spread occurs through the agency of Jewry, vampirizing all sentient life, mineral, vegetable, animal and the human all too human, all feeding the demiurge and the reptilians and jury in that order of precedence. The entire system is one of illusion, and all of the facets of the chiliastic matrix are designed to appear benevolent, being merely clothed in the appearance of benevolence and being actually of a sinister and malevolent nature, offering help and visiting harm, and this in the most secretive and clandestine way. The system is a fractal structure whose different facets are interrelated with one another, though apparently distinct. All run on the universal lubricant of the demiurge, namely energy, the life force, and this manifests within the system in the form of the universal value form of money. All qualitative distinctions are leveled to a quantitative plane of equality, everything being reduced to number and translatable into money. Our results are measurable in the JOG system, and the great architect of the universe measures the souls of his slaves with an exceedingly fine calibrated scale. All of his agents operate on the basis of the principle of economicity, maximizing the minimum possibility of gain and minimizing the maximum possibility of loss, maximizing the profit of energy with minimal costs to the system and its agents, placing their vampire deity Jehovah first before all, and this through the sacrifice of their own and others' energy through worship, prayer and other devotional forms of thought energy transference. Hence the economic system of fractional reserve banking is set up to absorb bioenergy in the form of interest it does not give but takes, and this under the facade of giving, which serves as the hook of incentive by which the goyim are brought into the system in the first place, the hook of money changing or money management and its false appearance of safety and security, of value through institutionalized banking, too big to fail financial cartel monopoly whose mammonist monolithic structure stands forth before the broad masses as their golden idol before which they prostrate themselves. Whether the particular economic system is command or demand to allow the concentration of wealth into the hands of Jehovah's earthly representatives is to hand a golden key to a gold vault to a common thief and depart on a lengthy vacation, leaving one's fate in his hands. The financial mismanagement system operates on the basis of an appearance of trust, of a bedrock of integrity which in physical form is solid-looking, a bank building with its cadre of hired guards and opulent and clever agents who create the appearance of stability and permanence. This is one of the simulacral facets of the Zion Matrix, a mere golden veil of Maya draped over the door of an empty vault whose wealth has been sequestered by the reptilian hybrids who slink in the shadows and who have stolen the wealth, the abstract or physical representation, of the bioenergy of their goyim slave class, substituting the counterfeit of the apparent value in the form of quantitative abstractions for the tangible and real value of chattels, realty and ultimately the life force of their slaves. Hence with the usury system of Zion, something is exchanged for nothing. The cunning rogues of Zion have established themselves through deceiving the gullibularians and other bipedal organic species of the human all too human. The financial wizards of economic science have piled up whole databases and academic curricula of tables of abstractions and equations to dupe and deceive the gullible into granting legitimacy to their usury system. In this particular form, the god of science has reared its ugly head yet again and stands with supreme arrogance as the infallible authority on all matters related to value. The universal value form of money has supplanted the spiritual value of vitality, of the life force, the soul of beings who have been convinced that their focus should be on the abstract nothingness of value tokens rather than the concrete and higher dimensional reality which constitutes their very essence. The god of materialistic atheism called science is the god of the matrix of mammon. The word science derives from the word scientia in Latin, which translates into wisdom in English, and this deity of modernity is far from being wisdom and its manifestation, but is in reality the violence of Jehovah embodied in a conceptual system based upon abstract quantity, signaling the reign of quantity within the prison plantation of the demiurge, his effective ideological instrument with which to rule the earth through humanoid agents, bringing a simulacral heaven onto the earth by crashing the gates of hell with his imposing dominance and aspiration to dominion over Gaia. Science extends itself as the cunning of reason of the Logos throughout the mechanical system of the JOG, a superimposed overlay upon the pre-existent vitality of spirit, encasing all in a leaden coffin of matter. The materialized world and its materialized denizens are, through the knowledge power technology of science, subject to the regulation and ordering of the demiurge through this means. The medical field, that of the law and the political apparatus, as well as and most importantly the religious system of institutionalized mind control and soul tithing. This tesseract structure of the crystalline matrix, a four-dimensional hypercube of processes and logistical interrelations, is the prison in which all are trapped and subject to a vampirization of their soul. The medical system, as Michel Foucault has laid out in copious hermeneutical analyses in his works The Birth of the Clinic and The History of Madness, are designed to harm the patients in a subtle and covert way over time, such that the harm is nearly undetectable to the goyim, both simultaneously dimensionals and the demiurge, and simultaneously maximizing their own profits in the process, fattening themselves just as the swindlers in the financial sector fattened on the wealth of their suckers and dupes. Swindlers pervade the GOG system, as it is a swindle itself, an apparently divinely appointed architecture of earthly organization designed as a veritable Garden of Eden on earth by their great architect of the universe and his priestly caste puppets. The legal system is a notorious facet of the GOG tyranny, and given that the judges and lawyers who constitute its wire pullers and button pressers are priests of Saturn, it may equally be said that the system is run by lawyers, given its Saturnian nature of restriction and limitation of vital life. Lawyer in common parlance being synonymous with liar, and the system being one of illusion and deliberate deception, it is also mercurial in nature, which is why its Luciferian apparatchiks exalt the cunning of reason as their modus operandi, operating on the same wavelength of logical stricture and control as their demiurge deity. The hybrid reptilians, the Jews and their Masonic and Christian affiliates who wear the black robe of Saturn in their official capacity, operate a kangaroo court system of illusion in which they are the judge, jury and executioners, and the accused is guilty before proven innocent. The notion of fairness propounded by the legal system in such jurisprudential toilet paper as John Rawls' A Theory of Justice and Richard Posner's Pragmatism in the Law and Other Ivory Tower Tombé are put forth as Talmudic justification for the installation of the laws of Jehovah. The Noahide law for the goyim slave class are subject to the imposition of a universalist international maritime law superimposed with violent aggression upon the common law which preceded it. The ratio decidendi and doctrine of precedent being supplanted by statute laws which supplant the sterile letters of Jewish Jehovistic law with the fluid and dynamic spirit of the laws of the land. In either case, however, both sides of this gavel of justice, the hammer of Jehovah wielded against his slaves with merciless cold-bloodedness, are universalistic, the simulacral universal of the GOG, the imposition of the violent will of the demiurge mediated through and translated by his earthly agents of the cabal. These priests of Saturn undoubtedly confer with the entities with whom they are bound in making their decisions, which are more often than not, and especially when brought against their enemies, acts of black magic designed to harm those who violate masters' rules. The indoctrination system is another facet of the matrix chiligan, in which the gaslighting and manipulation of the mass mind reaches a fever pitch and pervades the lifespan of the human all-too-human wetware from cradle to grave. It manifests itself in multidimensional form from kindergarten to graduate school, to the intellectual sophistication of academic journals, periodicals and works of pseudo-scholarship, to the tabloids and commercial broadcasts from the mind control machines the screened out masses gawk at with wonder as the gaslight wavers in front of their vision, obscuring their purblind perception of reality. The educational system, with its dogmatic pretense of authority regarding truth, subordinates truth under the Abrahamic despotism to the demiurge, the counterfeit absolute, violator of Mary Magdalene, and in the secular humanist indoctrination centers, truth is subordinate to majority decision, which latter is swayed and engineered a priori by the black magicians from the education ministry to the local board of education to the lowest level executive function of teachers. Both forms of the indoctrination system are designed to subject the docile bodies and minds of the passive sheep to the party line of Zion, that the Aryan race is the ultimate evil, Jews are the children of the demiurge who, it is alleged, is the best there was, the best there is, and the best there ever will be. Mongrelization is a moral imperative, slavish and unquestioning obedience to the priest caste a matter of salvation or damnation. The youth are divided into two groups, slaves and masters, with the former being indoctrinated to content themselves with their lot in life as mindless drones, mere voiceless tools of industry, and the latter, the master caste, restricting the potentiality of the former youth to the level of brutes, transforming potential supermen into subhuman animal men serviceable to their overlords. The illusory educational curriculum entails an entire history, psychology and pseudoscience that serves the exclusive purpose of putting slaves to work and confers nothing in terms of wisdom, understanding, higher purpose or meaning in life either in the Abrahamic or in the secular side of the educational facet of the matrix. The rigorous indoctrination undergone in the mind control system conditions the slave class and indeed the master caste who are beguiled by their egoic reflections in their vanity mirrors and conditioned to believe they are destined for greatness on the earth plane when in reality they are merely terraforming the earth so that it may be occupied by the reptilians. Hence their role as a would-be master caste is absurd as they are little more than slaves to the dark forces who would demote them to the status of their supper or a gladiator in the Colosseum had these dark forces their way reminiscent of the predictive programming movies The Running Man and The Hunger Games. Once passed through the system of slavery these slaves and masters go their separate ways, one up toward the higher ranks of the power structure, one down, sweating in the pit of economic serfdom and giving up their life force so that may be vampirized by the dark forces. In the section Spiritual Underachievers, Judeo-Christianity is castigated as the false promise of a heaven world above, as a means of conditioning the serfs to suffer mutely a living hell below. The church as discussed in the section Vampire Farm revealed as the Far Cities, as a giant architectural machine made of brick and mortar which is designed to trap within the energies of the congregation, within its square structure and, once the priestly caste black magician pastor or priest works his serfs up into a paroxysm of emotionalism their energies are released and fed upon by the transdimensional entities and simultaneously transmitted by the church spires upward and outwards to the planet Saturn wherein these entities have a base of operations. Hence churchianity not only serves as a spiritual program of mind control, an opium pipe for the sheeple to line up and take a pull in order to pacify their concerns over their daily lives of absurd cyclicity, but it serves as a harvester of soul energy to empower the demiurge and his subordinate minions. Churchianity thus is a blight upon the earth, a shackle upon the mind which enables the shackling of the body in wage slavery and the imprisonment of the population in the matrix. New ageism is simply another permutation of the same template for slavery which existed in the form of Christianity over the past 2000 years within the Piscean Age. It entails the same ideas of pacifistic conformism and reality denial that Christianity does only it incorporates a variety of practices which purport to confer upon the initiate or enlightened spiritual power. Hence infinite varieties of this same template are served up to the broad masses to condition them to lay down their weapons, turn their swords into plowshares and permit their slave chains to be riveted around their necks. One must not judge rather remain ignorant of reality, ignoring reality around them should it take them out of their happy state comfort zone. One must allow oneself to be buffeted and abused by the sadistic black magicians and their servitors never to fight back and oppose harm to oneself or to others. At least Christianity in its historical form had the option of fighting a jubilum or just war in defense of a Judaized universalism. It erred in attacking the good, the true and the beautiful and enabling the Jewish scarlet woman to ride upon its back in the beast's bloody track of crusading and conquering for the faith. Nonetheless it was not a complete suicide religion at least while it was turning itself against others, infidels, heretics, saving the best for last, for its own swan song of turning its abusive sadism upon itself as the ultimate virtue signal which latter played itself out in the sectarian war everlasting between Protestantism and Catholicism. New ageism, and largely a product of Jewish contrivance though having some oppositional qualities to Jewry such as in the case of Blavatsky, in large part has throughout its short history prescribed an obsessive focus on moralism of a quasi-Christian Hindu pacifistic do-no-harm variety. The real face concealed beneath this mask however is that of an inhibited and neurotic passive aggression which has the words peace and love forever on its lips while it breathes its halitosis breath in the face of its enemies and bites as it kisses, love bombing all who reject its fallacious presuppositions. These presuppositions are simply a convoluted extension of Christianism, the egalitarian submissiveness before the Earth Mother other than a spiritually virile and manly comportment toward the natural world as in the case of National Socialism, which upheld the aristocratic ideal of differentiated order, hierarchy, inequality, discipline and will to power. The New Age promised throughout its history and promises to this day nothing that would in any way conduce to a spiritually virile mode of life or upliftment of the lower being of fallen man to the level of Superman. It promises only a painted mask overlaid upon a cadaverous face draped in the rainbow flag of the failed integration of the soul. Contrast this spiritually soporific condition of soul syphilis with the esoteric Hitlerism of Miguel Serrano, which, far from being New Age, is indeed primordial, the Weltanschauung of the eternal age of timeless truth, which harkens back to the ancient Hyperborean solar Uranian tradition. The New Age is indeed in diametrical opposition to esoteric Hitlerism on the most fundamental points of its doctrine, escapist rather than pragmatically oriented, pacifistic rather than active in a virile sense, emotional rather than entailing a transcendent detachment from the chaos of worldly life, pathologically altruistic, venerating weakness and defectiveness rather than supporting power and strength harmoniously attuned to the absolute, a graceless and human-centeredness or if not human then purely telluric, a nature religion of pantheism rather than the higher transcendent orientation of esoteric Hitlerism, a condemnation of higher forms of life which exhibit strength and power, creative ingenuity and challenging endeavor substituting in its place a stagnation of positive action in the name of peace. Indeed, New Ageism is yet another constellation of spiritually suicidal creeds which are used as a means of tearing down legitimate power sources of opposition against the cabal, a channel through which to bleed off any pent-up aggression that may exist in those who might pose a threat to its hypocritical despotism. The distortion of New Ageism trickles down into the mass mind as so much poison from above and conditions the broad masses to follow broad and winding paths to the abyss laid out for them by jury as so many byways deviating from the straight and narrow path of truth. The consequences of venerable social cataclysm as spoken of prognosticatively by Albert Pikin.